Hanging out at the pool is great. Relaxing and playing Vegas-style games on my phone at the same time. Drink in one hand and a blackjack in the other. It's all at SpinQuest. Over 1,000 games, including your favorite slots and table games. Be cool with this summer special. New players get $30 coin packs for 10 at SpinQuest.com.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Roto Experts Fantasy Football Show. I am Davis Maddock, joined by Ben Gretsch, now of CBSSports.com. And I brought Ben on because I wanted to talk about this pretty interesting super flex best ball dynasty league that we are in. We were actually 1-2 last year. We both made it to the title game, and we just got done with our rookie draft. Ben, how you doing, buddy?
Doing pretty well, man. Thanks for having me on.
So before we were on air, we were talking about our rosters that made it to the final last year. And I think that they are pretty similarly constructed in the ways that we both really attacked the quarterback position. So we made sure. So last year, we both had three quarterbacks, both who were capable of starting. I actually traded. I traded a future first for Case Keenum. You just drafted like the Tannehill Dalton guys, like what, probably in like the 8th and 9th round.
Well, the startup last year was weird because this is a super flex, 12 team super flex best ball league. So we know that like in normal best ball leagues, it's good to have three quarterbacks if you have a deep enough roster, you know, settings. This is a 30 man league. So early on, and when we were going to the draft, I was thinking, okay, there's 12 teams, 32 teams in the NFL. Not everyone's going to have three starting quarterbacks. I didn't really want to waste roster spots on backup quarterbacks because you want to have as deep of running back, wide receiver, and tight end pools as you can in best ball as well. So I thought the starting quarterbacks would go pretty early, but I actually wound up drafting 5 different quarterbacks because no one was drafting them. And I traded one. I ended up playing last year with 4 of them.
So what I did was I got 3, but then so what you'll see in leagues like this, in Superflex Dynasty leagues where there's 12 teams, obviously there's not enough starting quarterbacks to go around for everyone to have 3. What I did was I drafted the handcuffs to my guys. So like the 2 of the guys I had were Drew Brees and Matt Ryan. And I was like, well, you know, those guys, if they get hurt, I'm screwed anyways. So I don't need the backups to them, but I traded for Case Keenum. So I made sure to get Chad Kelly, who, and you know, this draft happened before Chad Kelly got cut and everything. But I do think that is in this format, and even in a format that was not best ball, having the backup to your guy who projects for like 8 games. So if you were doing a super flex startup right now, you drafting Rosen and Fitzpatrick, or drafting Keenum and Haskins, having the platoon of those guys, because I do think the biggest advantage in this format is having 3 quarterbacks to choose scores from every week.
Right. Yeah. I mean, what I was saying was even in 1 QB leagues in best ball, you'd love to have 3 QBs. I mean, you can definitely get by with 2 if you're, you know, if you're playing on draft or somewhere that you only have a certain amount of roster spots, but you'd love to have 3 because it's the position, you know, we see spike scoring in that position, but this is super flex. So in my opinion, you'd love to have 4, but not even everyone was going to be able to have 3. So yeah, it was kind of bizarre that. But yeah, I mean, I agree with you about the backup thing. I mean, I do think it, like, there's a few people in our league that are rostering too many backup quarterbacks. I do get that only like half the league's teams every year have a 16 game starter, and I don't think people realize how many quarterbacks start an NFL game every season. It's typically right around 50. I mean, there's a lot of backups that get action, and in a deep super flex like this, yes, I mean, some backups should probably be owned, but there's some people that have like 3 or 4 backup quarterbacks on their roster, and I think those are wasted spots at, you know, running back and wide receiver and tight end, because the other side of this, you know, I think you may have already mentioned it, but is that we can't make any moves throughout the season. So your roster's locked all year. That's probably implied by best ball, but you kind of really want to make sure you're set at the quarterback position because you can't make any changes there, and you want to be able to have 2 QBs, you know, utilizing that super flex every chance you can, every week that you can get that.
Well, and the other thing about our league is that it also, not only is it super flex, but it's also start 2 tight ends. So I think this is actually probably the biggest mistake that a lot of the teams in this league made last year. And a lot of them rectified it in the free agency period that we just had. and in the draft. I think every team has at least four tight ends now, but that was not the case last year. So what I did, which I thought was clever, was I took Kelce in the second round, which still looks good, but I jumped early on Greg Olsen, which would have been good. I think would have been very good had he not been hurt, because the way I approached the first year was I wanted to get my entry fees paid back for 3 years or win. Like I just wanted to have it covered after the first year, which I was able to do. How did you feel about your rookie draft?
My rookie draft this year, I felt good about it. I moved around a little bit. I was at 12, and I was looking at pre-draft. I was looking at Chris Herndon there because we also had the free agents in there. There's obviously going to be good rookie still available at that point, but I thought Chris Herndon was probably the best available tight end, and I do really like the idea of being deep at tight end.
No, Herndon, I think, when I wrote the article for this draft, I think I said that was the sharpest pick of the whole draft. I actually think if I was, like, doing it again, I would have tried to trade up and get him, because I think he's got to be close to, like, dynasty tight end 12, 13, 14, you know, kind of in that range, and I don't think he was valued that way at all.
Right. I mean, I was targeting him at 112. AJ Brown was still available there because it is super flex. Damian Williams was a free agent who went in the first round as well. So a couple quarterbacks went in the first round. A free agent went in the first round. I really like AJ Brown, even though I don't love his landing spot in Tennessee, but I really like the player. So I took him at 112, and then I traded into the second round again a couple different times and got Hakeem Butler and Chris Herndon. And I ended up taking Herndon at 209. Which, like I said, pre-draft, I thought he might be a target for me at 112. So I thought that worked out pretty well. But then I had this huge gap from 209 until the really late stages of the draft because we did six rounds. And so I had three picks at 512, 602, 603, and I took a couple tight ends that I think will have their splash weeks. Matt Lacoste, who's in New England now and might actually end up being their top tight end. I mean, he got a two-year deal. I know they brought in ASJ, but ASJ has $50,000 guaranteed on his contract. Matt Lacoste got a two-year deal with $500,000 guaranteed on his deal. It might still be ASJ. You know, they also brought in Ben Watson recently, but I do think Matt Lacoste has the potential to have some touchdown weeks that make him viable in a best ball two tight end format for sure. And then I also got Will Dissly, who started out really hot for Seattle. And hopefully they have a lot of tight ends as well, but hopefully he's the guy that gets four or five touchdowns this year. Seattle always seems to have a tight end that scores a handful of TDs throughout the year. So got a couple more tight ends late that I'm basically just taking the shotgun approach at tight end. And we were talking off the air last year, I had eight tight ends in this two tight end format, and I started every single one of them at least 2 weeks. So, I mean, I think it's with a league like this, it's kind of unique. I mean, I think probably the biggest lesson that might be applicable to other leagues is you have to understand your roster settings. And I know that, like,
if you're able to understand the format and, like, what sorts of scores are likely to contribute better than the other people that you're in a league with, it's sort of like, and that's, I think that's actually why my team was able to get to the final. Cause like, I'll just read the guys who were in my starting lineup for the final game, like our championship game. It's not a good roster. It's Breeze, Ryan, Rex Burkhead, David Johnson, Cole Beasley, Adam Humphries, Alshon, Jordy Nelson, Westbrook, Kelce, and then a zero from Olsen. So, like, my roster that made it to the final, I don't even think I would grade it as, like, even a C dynasty team, but it fit everything that the league needed. I had the thing that I did that was different than most people was I loaded up on, like, possession wide receivers, which actually fits this format where so much of your scoring is going to come to the quarterback and the tight end because they make up more of a starting lineup than they do in most leagues. So I think I got Adam Humphries in the 15th round. I got Jordy Nelson in the 17th round of the startup. I got Marvin Jones really late. Like, those sorts of, like, boring four catch guys are really bad in, like, draft best balls, but in this format they're actually, like, very good.
Yeah, they can. I mean, it's a deep starting lineup too, so you want to make sure you have, like, at least 10 points from every lineup spot was kind of my thing. And you're gonna have some guys have splash games. I mean, I definitely took a couple guys like that. I took Willie Snead. I'm looking at my draft last year. I took Willie Snead, like, in the 20th round. I took Chester Rogers a little bit more, but I also like the deep splash guys. I took DeSean Jackson and Ted Ginn, Tyrell Williams. I mean, I think you need balance. I definitely did that at running back. I mean, I took Darren Sproles super late. I took, you know, Kenneth Dixon. I took Gio Bernard and Nyheim Hines. I mean, same thing. I mean, if you get the – in a PPR format, if you get the 5 or 6 catch game from your running back, I mean, that's a viable week, you know?
Right. And I mean, I think that's a huge point. So what I did in the rookie draft was I somehow got even older. I took Jason Witten coming off the year of retirement in the 5th round of our rookie draft. I took CJ Uzama in the 6th round of our rookie draft. I added Ryan Switzer, another old guy. Like, I think the only rookie I took, let's see here. I took 3 rookies. I took Mecole Hardman with my first, which I feel really good about because I don't like Mecole Hardman really that much as a player. And I, you know, if anything happens to Patrick Mahomes, he's like useless, but because my roster is what I should have tried to do was I should have tried to trade up to get the Damian Williams spot. I should have tried to get to 104. He would have made sense for my roster.
Maybe, but you would have to give up a lot. I think Hardman's a really good pick, especially in best ball. I mean, he's a deep speed guy. He's going to have some splash plays. I think there's, you know, there's definitely some people that think he's going to be way too close to a 1-to-1 replacement for Tyreek Hill, assuming Tyreek Hill's not, you know, not active this year, but he might, even if he's 60% or even if he's 30% of Tyreek Hill, he will have some splash plays that makes him, you know, a usable player in best ball in certain weeks.
Yeah, I mean, he will – I feel very certain in saying he'll have 3 20-plus point weeks probably, which is like – I don't know if DK Metcalf will do that. I don't know if A.J. Brown will do that. Like, they might have more 12-point weeks, but Hardman definitely has a little bit more upside. And then the other guys that I added were Tony Pollard, who I thought was sort of undervalued in this format because – I think he's actually similar in terms of like that they plan on using him in that splash role. Like Tavon Austin was actually not a horrible best ball player last year because he had 2 touchdowns over 75 yards and he was really cheap. And I think Pollard is sort of going to play in that role. And Mike Weber just hurt his knee. So it seems like Pollard is like sort of a lock to be the backup running back there. And
yeah, that was a good pick late in the 5th round. I mean, definitely. Yeah. And so was Witten. I really liked the Witten pick. Witten's last 2 years, he got 20% and 18% of the targets. He played a higher average snap share than any tight end in the NFL on a weekly basis. Now, he might be a part-time player, but this isn't like Antonio Gates coming back from retirement where Gates was already a part-time player. I mean, I know Witten sat out a whole year, but before he left,
probably good for Witten. His body just healed up for a whole year. Right. He knows, like, this is it.
And before he retired, he was playing every snap some games. I mean, I don't think he's going to come back and be a 40% snap share guy. I mean, he might not play 100% of the snaps again, but I think people are like thinking about this like Antonio Gates coming back and being this bit part player, but Gates was already a bit part player late in his career. He was already a passing game guy. Witten, before he retired, was still an every down guy who was seeing 18% target share in 2017. I mean,
well, also, it's not like Jason Witten was ever a red zone threat anyways because he's not tall. He's not that big.
Right.
So, like, he's like a second and eight sort of guy. Like, he's 4 catches for 54 yards. That's, like,
right. But sixth
stat line.
6th and 7th among tight ends in receptions in 2016 and 2017. I mean, his last 2 seasons, he was top 8 in tight end receptions both those years. I mean, he's, like, in, like, regular non – dynasty best balls, he's going like tight end 30. I mean, I don't think you should be going out of your way to get him, but like you can get him in with a last round pick in like in that kind of a best ball setting makes sense. And in this format, you got him 4-11. Like in the end of the 4th round, even if he's only a 1-year player in a 2-start 2 tight end league, I thought that was a really smart addition.
Yeah, I liked that pick. And then the other guy that I added that I thought was like, I think he probably is pretty likely to add points to my roster this year is Ryan Switzer, because I think like the most likely scenario right now is that he like starts out as their slot guy to start the year. Will they try and like, I think James Washington will probably maybe it'll be Moncrief and maybe Smith-Schuster will be, but I think Switzer should at least find a way to like, I don't know, 40 catches this year or something like that. Like he was,
I just did their projection the other day. I'm going through my team projections right now, and he caught 36 balls last year. He had 44 targets last year, 3.9 ADOT. They threw him the ball at like such like a running back ADOT almost. I mean, super, super low, you know, close to the line of scrimmage passes. But, yeah, definitely. Pittsburgh obviously has more available targets now with Antonio Brown gone. So I could totally see Ryan Switzer having some splash games as a slot guy.
Well, that offense is just interesting to project because we haven't, like, our sample of no Antonio Brown, no Le'Veon Bell is like there is just incredibly small. Where are you right. at on where are you at on James Conner? I was having this conversation with Michael Leone the other day. Just like I think that there is like some real downside with him because so much of his value, like, and just like with all running backs, so much of their value is tied to usage. Do you think sort of like for the first time with the Steelers, we could see something close to a timeshare with Jalen Samuels getting more work?
I mean, it's a concern for sure. I think Samuels, I think I project Samuels to have a pretty solid receiving role. But again, they have a lot of available opportunity, man. I mean, I think Juju Smith-Schuster might lead the NFL in targets.
We have him projected for the most targets in the NFL.
Yeah, that's where I'm at right now. I just did Houston too, and I didn't have DeAndre Hopkins ahead of him, and I think he might be the biggest competition just because I think Pittsburgh's going to throw a ton too. They threw quite a bit last year. I have them throwing quite a bit more than Houston overall. But yeah, I mean, James Washington had he's solid, but he had a 43% catch rate last year. I don't think Dante Moncrief's that great. Deontay Johnson, a third round rookie is, potentially can contribute, but these guys are not like big names. And Switzer, Vance McDonald, I think is a good tight end, but like that's the rest of their receiving core. I mean, there's no one there that's going to really stop Juju Smith-Schuster from getting a ton of targets. I think the other impact, to get back to your question, is we might see the running back targets tick up again. They were down last year without Le'Veon Bell, but I have Connor projected for 75 targets and still have Jalen Samuels projected for 43. I mean, they have those two guys combining for almost 120 targets. So, I think Connor will still handle most of the between the tackles work, but they also drafted Benny Snell, who could get some carries. Personally, I wound up with Connor higher than I thought he would be.
Yeah, that was the same thing as I felt like he would sort of be like the 10th running back or whatever. But then when I ran it all out with the team level projections on the way down, I think he's running back 7 for me, just in terms, like, not how I rank them, but just in terms of projections. I did not think he would be that high.
Yeah, I haven't finished yet, but right now, I mean, I have him a couple points ahead of Melvin Gordon, who I've always been a huge fan of and I really like, and I particularly like because of even when he was a more inefficient runner, he got a little bit better in yards per carry last year, but because of this combination that he's always had of the receiving work and then the high touchdown rate, because he gets a ton of red zone work. But Gordon's a guy who I'm actually a little bit more concerned about because he's been banged up pretty much every year at the end of the year. Last year, Austin Eckler was a lot more involved even when they were both healthy. And then late in the year, Justin Jackson was effective too. So maybe this year they finally incorporate a third running back as well. I don't see why they wouldn't and limit Gordon a little bit. So I ended up feeling more confident in Gordon's a guy whose workload I've always loved. And I actually feel a little bit more confident in Connor's workload, I think, this year.
Yeah, I mean, I think they like Eckler, and I think, like, maybe they would even give Justin Jackson, like, 10%, like, maybe he gets 60 carries and 20 targets over the course of the year.
Right.
Something like that, and, like, all of those little subtractions from Gordon's workload are not great for him.
And from a team perspective, yeah, they're not great for him for fantasy, but from a team perspective, it makes perfect sense. I mean, Justin Jackson was effective late last year. Eckler's been effective in a change of pace role. And what all you'd be doing is limiting the wear and tear on Gordon, your back that you really want as your feature back when you need him. And this is a team that's got to be planning for the postseason. And every year Gordon has worn down, in December-ish. So yeah. I don't see why they wouldn't do that. I mean, I think that's, if you're looking at it from an offseason perspective, how do we want to manage our running backs? Now we have two backs behind him that have both proven to be effective. I mean, I think probably managing Gordon's touches and anticipating that you're going to be a playoff team this year makes a ton of sense to not do it. They might not, but it's kind of what I'd expect.
What do you think of the Siege's rebuild? Cause I'm looking at his roster, and actually, like, in terms of like a teardown, I think he did a pretty good job. He has 4 starting quarterbacks all under the age of 24. He's got Darnold, Goff, Jones, and Kyler. He has nothing at running back. He does not have one running back that you would even say is like a top 40 guy in Dynasty. He's got some interesting young wide receivers, like in particular guys who I think are undervalued in Dynasty are Gallup, Hamilton, Deontay Johnson, Deebo Samuel, even Justin Watson, I thought was like a pretty sharp acquisition. And then he has 8 tight ends. So I think his team sucks, obviously, but I think like in terms of a teardown, I think he did about as good as you can possibly do.
Yeah, no, I definitely think if you're going to do a teardown, you have to commit to it.
Right. Yeah, you can't try and hold on to 6 guys to carry you to maybe make the, like, you got to just be like, oh, you'll give me a third round draft pick for, you know, whatever, Adam Shaheen. Okay, fine. He's gone.
Right. And any kind of contributor has a lot more value to another team than your team if you're not going to be good. So I would actually jump over to another guy's team to make a little bit of a comparison, who I love and I don't want to dog on too much, but Ryan Hodge, awesome dude, but he has Alvin Kamara, Christian McCaffrey, and Mike Evans, three absolute dynasty studs. But the rest of his roster is not very good. He just doesn't have, like, his fourth best player is probably like Dante Pettis, like Marquise Lee.
Yeah, it's Duke all Johnson. Concentrated in those three guys.
Right, and when you're in a best ball league, particularly a 30-man best ball league, again, this gets back to the understanding the format. And you got to – I'm not saying he doesn't understand the format, but you got to think that you want to have depth, right? And so those three guys could have 20-point weeks every week, but that's only 60 points. He's still got to get points from other places. And so you need a lot of guys that can have peak weeks. He has some players that can have splash weeks, but I don't think that roster is going to compete. So if I was in his position – I probably would have tried to move guys like Kamara, McCaffrey, and Evans. You can try and build around them, but it's really hard to do. If you move them, you can build – I mean, you can build around two of the others by moving one and probably getting four useful pieces, you know. And that can be a pretty quick way to rebuild. And Siege kind of did that.
He did – Siege did trade up to get Kyler, though, which let Leone – so. Yep. So Leone, his team was 0-14 last year. He only had one quarterback the whole year. It was horrible. And I actually think Michael did a great job rebuilding his roster. So he turned that 101 into Jimmy G, Dwayne Haskins, and Josh Rosen. He was able to add three quarterbacks for having the 101, which I thought was really good. He was able to add Justice Hill, who I think will be – I mean, I think he's going to get – 180 carries this year right away. He had really high upside guys in Arcega Whiteside and Isabella in the rookie draft, and he was able to get Irv Smith in a two tight end starting league. Like, I think he went in the second. I think he was the first pick of the second round, maybe. So I thought Michael did a great job rebuilding his roster.
Yeah, no, I think he has a chance to go from, you know, dead last to the playoffs this year. I mean, I think he did a fantastic job. The trade that he made that you referenced with Siege, had the 101, traded back to like 106 or 107 or something, and got Garoppolo, and then also drafted Haskins. So he was able to get two starting quarterbacks. And again, in a best ball format, I mean, Kyler Murray, I love, but in a best ball format, having two starting quarterbacks is probably better than having one, you know, in a deep format where just having the starters is a pretty huge advantage. So I thought that was a smart trade, and I agree with you. I think he did a really good job of adding a lot of talent. Traded for DJ Moore, which is just like, I love DJ Moore right now in all formats, but especially in Dynasty, obviously. Still has DeAndre Hopkins.
Yeah, DJ Moore is like, DJ Moore might be like my wide receiver 13 or 14 when I go back in and do Dynasty rankings again. I'm like pretty bullish on him long term.
Yeah. No, I am too. I mean, I think he had a really strong rookie year. Then they moved on from Devin Funchess again right away, obviously moved on from Calvin Benjamin two years ago. So, like, you got to assume they're going forward. DJ Moore, Curtis Samuel, Christian McCaffrey, which, by the way, they're going to have so much speed, so much versatility. Both Samuel and Moore can run the ball and had a lot of rushing production last year. Samuel had, at least one ridiculous long – it was like a 30-yard touchdown run, but he reversed field like three times. I think he might have had another rushing touchdown last year. He was very effective with the ball in his hands. And Moore was probably even more effective. I remember about mid-season, his yards per touch, his yards per rush, and yards per catch, which he had like a low ADOT, but it was all this yards after the catch.
Yeah.
I mean, they were just absurd rates. And, you know, that stuff normalizes over time. But he showed last year that he's very, very good at the ball in his hands, good at making plays. So they have a ton of versatility in that offense now. I think Moore's going to be a huge centerpiece of that offense. Yeah, and then obviously Christian McCaffrey is a running back who can catch better than probably any running back in the league. So they got a bunch of dudes that can catch and run and have a ton of speed. So they're going to be tough for defensive coordinators to game plan against. But Yeah, I love Moore. I think he's a really strong prospect, and I think his rookie season was really promising.
I think the most interesting thing about Dynasty right now, like literally a problem that I don't even know if it's solvable, is figuring out what to do with this elite tier of wide receivers that is entering into their age 30 seasons. So we have Julio Jones and AJ Green both entering in to their age 30 seasons in a year where we just had, AJ Brown drafted highly, Marquise Brown drafted highly. We have DJ Moore, who was a first round pick last year, JJ Arcega-Whiteside, who was a second round pick this year, Alshon Jeffrey, another guy who's getting old, Demaryius Thomas, completely off the map like that. Dez Bryant is gone. The landscape of fantasy wide receivers, this is going to be like, I think, the last year that it looks like this. And then we're going to see like a new tier of Smith-Schuster, Odell Beckham. Hopkins is what? I think he's 28 maybe.
Yeah, he's been in the league for like 6 years. I don't know if he came in really young. I don't know if he's 28 yet, but he's been in the league for at least 6 years, I want to say. He's 26, turns 27.
Okay, yeah, so he's not as old as I thought. So he would still be in that tier with Odell and with Smith-Schuster. And, you know, Antonio Brown also entering his age 30 season is now in a much worse offensive environment. Like, I think over the last 12 months, like, the whole wide receiver environment of Dynasty fantasy has like really changed, I think. And if you're still sort of holding on to those old evals, like AJ Green is like a fourth round dynasty pick now, and like, you know, he would have been a guy 2 years ago who's like close to a first rounder.
Yeah, no, that's a great point. And it's actually a great point for dynasty generally. Like, it's easy to look at the current situation, and I think you can definitely get yourself into trouble trying to project 2 or 3 or 4 years down the road, because every year our projection accuracy just for that year isn't great. I mean, the best projectors for NFL, for fantasy football, they hit what, like 70%, 65%. There's a lot of turnover every year. There's guys that jump a ton of rounds in like a dynasty startup ADP value, and guys that fall a ton of rounds every season. But at the same time, if you look a few years back, you just referenced AJ Green, but Dez Bryant was a first round dynasty pick maybe like 3 years ago or 4 years ago.
And now he's just out of the league.
And Demaryius Thomas and Calvin Johnson was for a bunch of years, and then he just kind of retired, which, you know, you can't really predict that. But even last year, Antonio Brown was. And I think now Antonio Brown's value has dropped quite a bit.
Antonio Brown should be like same range, like third, fourth round pick, something like that.
Yeah, and I mean, I have a league where I had Antonio Brown, and I moved him this year for N'Keal Harry in a league where we did the rookie draft before the NFL draft, but Harry was my clear 101. He still is after he landed with the Patriots, but I figured, look, I mean, this maybe is a little bit of an overpay right now, but that team, you know, might be able to compete. It went to the playoffs last year, but I think N'Keal Harry is going to be a productive NFL player, and it seems a little bit like Antonio Brown for this unproven rookie seems a little bit crazy, but at the same time, Antonio Brown, like, we're pretty much certain. I mean, I don't think he's going to be super productive like 3 years from now. So it's one of those things, like, better to get off a year early where he still has the type of value where I can trade for the 101 than a year late. Like, if he has a bad year this year, there's no way you can get that type of value out of Antonio Brown. Like, there are players in Dynasty you have to be able to recognize have the potential to their value to drop really significantly. If Brown doesn't fit in well in Oakland this year, he's still going to be very, very valuable. But right now might be the last chance that you have to, like, it's possible. It's not guaranteed.
No, I would put it like him. My two biggest sells in Dynasty right now are Adam Thielen and Antonio Brown. I'm pretty sure that people don't know that Adam Thielen's 29 years old. I'm pretty convinced people think he's 25.
The one league I have him in, I'm in a league with like Silva and JJ and Pat Thorman and Rebar and Sean Siegel. It's just an absolute murderer's row of players. And I've been trying to sell Thielen for a couple off seasons, but no one wants to buy him. I mean, those guys know, but you're right. I mean, he's absolutely somebody that people should be looking to move, because he's up there. He's going to be productive for a couple more years. And if you think you can win the championship in the next couple of years, it might make sense to keep him. But if you can get full value for him now and still be productive in the next couple of years, maybe the next couple of years you only get 80% of the type of production that he would give your team. So you lose a little bit of short-term equity, but you have the potential to still have assets 2 years from now that are, you know, top four, top five round startup assets, you know, in place of Thielen, who we can pretty much be certain in 2 or 3 years is not going to be a top four, top five startup guy. Cause it's going to be clear then, you know, when he's 31, 32 years old, that he's not, you know, a spring chicken. And that's the same concept with the Antonio Brown, N'Keal Harry thing. I just said, I mean, not quite the same, because I know N'Keal Harry is not going to be as productive as Antonio Brown this year. He might get less than half the targets, but I think he has the potential in a couple of years to still be a very valuable asset. Whereas Antonio Brown has the potential to not be. So,
yeah. All right. So before we get out of here, let's just get some predictions for how this league plays out. And if anyone listening to this, if you want the link to this league, if you just go to rotoexperts.com, it's like, it's good. I think it's our most clicked on article. So it's up there on the left tab, or if you just search Roto Experts Superflex Dynasty League, it will come up as well. Your team, it's still looking pretty strong. Like, you have some guys who I think are undervalued by the market that I really like Giovanni Bernard and Ronald Jones, and yeah, even Willie Snead, or like spiked week guys like Randall Cobb or Ted Ginn. I think you could go back to back pretty conceivably.
I think you just named my worst five players though. I mean, I have some good talent. I have Melvin Gordon. I have Amari Cooper, Kenny Golladay, Robert Woods, Michael Thomas. So I have pretty strong receivers. OJ Howard is my tight end. I mean, that's a thing. I actually invested in running backs and receivers early in the startup and still got pretty solid quarterbacks. So I like where my team's at, definitely. I like your team. I like Kitchen's team. I like Amico's team, who has mentioned that he thinks he has the best team in the league. I don't know if that's necessarily true, because I don't really think his tight ends are deep enough. I mean, we got to that point a little bit earlier, but
He does have two guys who I think are going to give him scores every week in Mark Andrews and Evan Ingram. And then I think Mike Gesicki, like, if you told me Mike Gesicki went full Kittle year two and he has like 120 targets and 7 touchdowns, I'd be like, yeah, no, I mean, that sort of like is a thing that I could reason in my head.
In the Miami offense, I think, yeah, I mean, it's possible, but I think that's asking a lot. And I think Mark Andrews being an every week producer and what's going to be probably the lowest volume passing offense in the NFL is asking a lot.
I think it's not outlandish for him to lead them in targets though.
No, I don't either. But I do think that, like, yeah, you can probably rely on Evan Ingram most weeks, maybe not every week, because, again, not a great offense. Some weeks Eli Manning's just going to be bad. Or Daniel Jones late in the year if he's starting. But yeah. Andrews and Gesicki, yeah, I mean, I think you're hoping that that combination gets you a startable week every week. But, again, like, right now, I'm not going to go into the year like this, but right now I'm rostering 9 tight ends. And yeah. Again, like, I had 8 last year, and tight ends just aren't consistent week to week. We talked about it a little bit off the air, but, like, they're the position where, you know, they carry higher TD rates than wide receivers do. They don't necessarily – or definitely don't catch as many passes. So they're the position in best ball where, yeah, you might just get a 10-point week because your guy caught 2 passes and scored a touchdown. But that's good enough. You know, I have guys like Cameron Brate who's going to do that a couple times this year.
Right, yeah.
I don't have any, like, great tight ends, but
Amico could trade a quarterback for a tight end pretty easily, though. He has Jameis, Flacco, Fitzpatrick, Dalton, and Tom Brady. Like, he could either trade Jameis in, like, a big deal for one of the stud tight ends, or he could trade Flacco for – you know, Jimmy Graham or whatever. Like, there are guys out there that, like, it would make sense for, like, another competing team that's short on quarterbacks. Like, I'm sure there's a deal out there.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, I think that's definitely true. And then Beer is another one that we haven't talked about yet. Beer, Makers fan, has Patrick Mahomes, which is great in the Superflex League, obviously.
And he's got Cam, and he's got Trubisky.
And he's got a pretty stacked group of running back and receivers. I mean, I think – if you look at the teams that were in the playoffs last year and were good last year, it's because they had good tight ends. I mean, we went back to, you know, we talked about that a lot earlier, but being able to get productive weeks out of both your tight end spots is pretty huge. I mean, I know, like, in the offseason, Britt Devine looked at my roster and was like, man, what incredible run good for Gretsch to win the league. And it's true. I mean, in the playoffs, I was the third highest scoring team out of 4 in both playoff weeks. I got pretty lucky with matchups. Beer beat me both weeks. But you beat him in the other semi, and then I outscored you in the championship. So even though this other playoff
my team is so bad, it's like, it's honestly a joke. It's like my team is my team was built to win year one. I don't think it's good enough to compete this year. Like I will have to trade something for a quarterback probably to, you know, stand at like to stand a chance this year, which yeah, I don't want to do.
Yeah. Yeah. You're kind of light on impact talent, but yeah, I mean, just to finish that thought, like what I think is interesting about Beer's team is he was so productive, even though he didn't have a ton of tight end production. Everyone else in the playoffs and that was good last year had tight end production. And you have that. You have that with Travis Kelce. You still have Greg Olsen. You added Jason Witten. I mean, I think you're going to be okay at the tight end position. I think there's points to gain there. In best ball, you're looking for those edges. And in this format, I think there's points to gain at tight end. The thing about Beer's team that makes it so impressive is he outscored everybody in the league last year, but without any tight end production. But yeah, I mean, I think what made my team good last year, even though, you know, Britt was saying that, you know, I must have had an incredible run good. I mean, it was good enough to make the playoffs, and it scored just 20 points less than Beers over the course of the entire season. And I think it was the structure of it. It's the whole idea of like understanding your league settings and finding little edges. I mean, I have some good players for sure, but maybe not as much talent as other teams, but knowing how to build your roster, where to have depth. In this format, you only have to start one running back every week. You only have to start one receiver every week. So I'm basically looking at those two positions as one giant pool. And I have, I think, like 18 of those two positions combined and still have room to have like 10 or 12 tight ends. So I think that's eight to 10 tight ends. I mean, I think that's the way to do it because you have to have two tight ends every week. And I still should get enough good production for those running back and wide receiver slots out of that, you know, pool of the other 18 that I'm rostering. Not necessarily needing to choose two of them every single week. So I don't really have to have depth on both sides, but yeah, I mean, other good teams, I think Leone is the other one who has the potential to surprise this year. He has a pretty deep team now and it's pretty amazing.
He really churned his resources really well. I think that he's another team that like is like drawing live to the title for sure.
Yeah. I think that's going to be the kind of the top of the league there. I mean, Siege is tanking. I don't think Hodge's team is deep enough to do it. I don't know if Dan Bach's team is going to be able to do it. Josh ADHD's team might be able to compete a little bit. It's solid. But, again, like any of these teams that I see that don't have tight end depth, I mean, there's some teams that
have like and three.
He has a couple of good ones. He has Kittle and Austin Hooper. But if you don't have depth, I mean, that's the thing. I mean, I think tight end, there's a lot of spike weeks, just like we see – in best ball formats where, you know, we see a lot of great advice to target high A dot receivers who have spiked weeks, who are boomer bust types, because they're going to add a lot more value in best ball. You get to use them when they have their splash plays. Tight ends are similarly, especially a deep league with where tight end is very deep. Everyone's rostering at least like four or five minimum. Like having these guys that are maybe even the second tight end on their team, but they're in a good offense. They have the potential for a high touchdown total. Like Matt Lacoste. I mean, Martellus Bennett, when he was the number two tight end for New England, had solid touchdown rates. Even going back to like Scott Chandler, that guy caught like six touchdowns or seven touchdowns when he was playing behind Rob Gronkowski. Like if you target the tight end too in like a good passing offense, there's a potential for those guys to catch enough touchdowns to be usable some weeks. And you can gain a lot of points over people that like I remember I was looking at Beer's team last year and he was so productive, but he had a week where he took a zero at tight end. He had a couple other weeks where he took literally like 1.5 points or 1.6 points. That's a huge loss in best ball. It's just
hard to make that up with spiked weeks from like you need everything to line up perfectly. Like you need your spiked weeks at wide receiver to match up with your 1.5s from tight end. Like it's just tough to get that to all add up.
It's really tough. Yeah. And so I think, I mean, you have to have a really good roster otherwise, and it makes it a lot more difficult. And that's the understanding structure thing. And I think probably if you looked at my team, I didn't actually look at what the lowest was, but I think almost every week I had at least 8 to 10 points from both tight end spots. And I mean, that's huge. I was gaining points on people who had even had an elite tight end who maybe just had a 15 point week, but they didn't have anything out of their tight end two spot. And I was gaining tight end points with like Antonio Gates and Cameron Brate being my two tight ends, just because they're the guys that had the spike week that week. So definitely think you need to have tight end depth in this format. So that's if I'm really trying to pick a winner, I'm definitely going to try and find people who have that kind of depth. The Carey brothers are another team that are really good. They were good last year. They had Zach Ertz and Eric Ebron. They still have both those guys. They drafted Noah Font. So that's a team that's going to be pretty good too.
Yeah. All right, man. Tell them about what you're doing now with the new gig at CBS.
Yeah, man. I mean, I'm a fantasy editor over there. It's really great. It's been really great so far getting to know the team. I'm going to just be helping out football, you know, getting ready for football season right now, probably doing a little bit of baseball. Not yet, though. I mean, right now I'm focusing on projections. We're doing a lot of editing for the magazines we're doing over there. So just getting ready for the season, building out the content schedule and all that. So it should be pretty exciting.
All right, everyone, check out the CBS Sports Fantasy content edited and projected by none other than our own Ben Gretsch. Take it easy, everybody.
What's going on, everyone? It's Bluff here, and we're driving through the states in the Bluffmobile, and the best thing that we can do is play our favorite casino-style games on SpinQuest. They have over 1,000 games, including live dealer, blackjack, and craps, with tons of slots and unlimited options. You can get a $30 coin pack for just $10 for new users. Sign up today. Go to SpinQuest.com right now.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.